Hey, and thanks for listening. This is Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Let's get started. This is episode 14 of True Voice Media Conversations. This is our podcast where we talk to amazing people. And today, I have an amazing person. I have an amazing person on the line with me today. Her name is Gloria Bell. And when I describe Gloria Bell to others, and typically even when I describe Gloria Bell to Gloria Bell, I describe her as the digital online representation of a hug, because you are one of the sweetest people I have ever met, both in real life and online. And I think that there's so much that people could learn from how you carry yourself online. And that's mainly what I want to talk about today. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to title this episode yet, Miss Gloria Bell. But it's going to have
hug.
It's going to be something with hugs. can you please tell them about yourself?
Well, first of all, thank you, Jeff. There's nothing more flattering than being called a virtual hug, I got to tell you. I am Gloria Bell. I'm currently the chief digital strategist at Bell Digital Strategies. Very fancy name for saying that I am working with a great team of other independent contractors in web design, development, social, email, all kinds of really great things, helping businesses evaluate their online presence and build it better, whether it's a new website they need, in which case I connect to them with some great people that do websites. If it's social, I do strategy. But I help them figure out what's working, what's not working, and how we can use their online presence better. And I'm also branching into a new set of consulting that I'm actually kind of struggling with finding a good name. Jeff, you and I and Amber Naslin had a great Google Plus chat the other day about, you know, struggling to find a new name for what this new evolution of social is about. But what I'm really interested in working with companies on now is not only what their online presence looks like and what it needs to be, but making sure that everything internally supports that online presence, whether it's internal communication or it's making sure all the dots are connected so the person managing their Twitter account knows the right person internally to get a customer's problem solved or to get the right lead to the right person or to help close that sale. So that's what I'm doing right now.
Awesome. So for those listening and who have heard my spiel on what I do and have bumped into other people that work in social media, it could sound like, yeah, a lot of people do that. But I want to set the record straight that Gloria has been doing this since the beginning, since they said, let there be social. Gloria was one of those people out there being social. And one of the things that I always like to think about is, you know, the time that you and I have spent when we would go to things like the 140 conference, or we would go to, you know, any of the myriad of other events that you either helped coordinate, volunteer at, organize entirely or whatever, is the times that we would go and just kind of chat about the early days of social. And we would talk about what it was like before it got so commercial, man. You know, when it wasn't, you got a Twitter account because you had to have one or because, you know, that was a great place to push your message, but because it was like, what's this new thing and how can I talk to new people? And, it's so funny. I distinctly remember when we went to the 140 conference, you telling me all about those early days and like the 12 people or 15 people or whatever it was that, like, you know, all had those conversations in social. So, you know, Gloria, really, you've been doing it since the beginning. So do me a favor. One thing I'd love to talk to you about is, in as someone who's been doing this for as long as you have and has seen so much and who uses social media so socially, where do you think that we're going? Are we on the right track? Or are we on the wrong track now? Are we seeing, you know, you look at the stuff that's happening with the Facebook algorithm and the degradation of posts. Is that a good thing? Because on the one hand, it could have us see more friends posts. On the other hand, what if friends start having to pay to post? You know, like, are we on the right path?
I think we're going through an evolution that's necessary. When, you know, you and I've had these conversations about what the early days of social media were like, and literally no exaggeration, when there was, you know, 15 of us having a actual conversation that lasted over, you know, several hours in an evening, to where we are now. And I think it's an evolution that's necessary for the industry to figure out what it's really going to be. I mean, everyone, we've gotten so used to it, it's such an integral part of our lives now, we forget that it's really in its infancy. You know, technology's been around a little while. How we're using it for this whole digital communication piece is really still very young, and we're still figuring it out. That's why there's something new and shiny all the time. So I think where we are going, I'm not thrilled with the constant changes at Facebook. I would really like to see them try something and let it live for a little while. I think their constant changes are not good for anybody on a personal or a commercial side, because what ends up happening is people get frustrated. When they get frustrated, they either go to one extreme or another. They either post a lot because they think that's the only way to get people to see there. And when you post too much, you end up posting a greater majority of crappy content. Or they say, well, this isn't working, and they quit entirely. And I think, you know, and that's both personally and professionally. I mean, I've had friends that would never envision using Facebook for something professional, yet they've left the platform because they're not seeing what they want to see. So I think it's a necessary evolution across all the platforms that we've got to figure out how this really fits. And then we'll get back to that point where everybody understands that really all we're trying to do is talk to each other.
I think that really does get lost in the shuffle so much. You know, I had mentioned it was so funny because only you would have been the person to chime in on this too, where I said, you know, wouldn't it be nice if people started using social to be social again and, I don't know, have a conversation? And it set off this whole firestorm where, I mean, not a firestorm, that's quite an exaggeration, but there was a handful of us that were like, we actually got into a full conversation around that idea about using social media as a conversation on Twitter. And it's so funny, you know, when I give presentations and talk about social media and Twitter, you know, people get so stuck on the marketing of it. And I'm like, can you just for a minute just consider that it might be awesome to just meet people, that it might just be a really good way to meet people and that you don't need to dollar and cents every piece of it. But let me ask you this. You know, you had mentioned we're in our infancy, right? So that immediately makes me think of people, right, and how we grow, how we're in our infant stage and we're filled with hope and we're full of wonder, you know, and we have these beginner eyes in the way we look at the world, and it's beautiful, right? We have kids that are the embodiment of everything we hope to be, but as we grow older, we get jaded and we have our experiences that shape and mold our perspective. And I'm wondering if, as we're leaving the infancy of social, are we losing that bright-eyed optimism and unicorns and rainbows that it could have been, where social helps to unlock a world that's a better place, it's more connected, it's more human? And are we instead just turning this into cable television, where now it's a pay-to-play system and it's just about who can spend the biggest ad budget? I mean, is that something that concerns you as much as it concerns me?
Actually, it does not concern me probably as much as it concerns you, for one really, really important reason. Is there are a lot of people like yourself, like a lot of the other people that I've known in this industry, you know, in the lot of years that I've been doing this, who all understand it's still communication. That's all it is. Whatever the shiny piece of technology that we're using, this awesome hangout that we're doing to record this, or whether it's Twitter or Vine or Snapchat or, you know, Pinterest or whatever it might be, it's still about communicating. And there's enough people who are still leading the charge in a lot of this who still remember that's the basics. I mean, I tell people all the time when I speak and when I was teaching, you have to remember that this is all about communication. That's all. Whether it's one-to-one, whether you're sending a message to a whole lot of people, it's as long as we keep it about we are trying to communicate with someone, whether it's a value proposition for a business or I'm letting my, you know, cousin know about the new puppy I bought, whatever it might be.
You got a puppy?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. But sorry.
I'm wanting a puppy. I looked at a puppy this morning. So, yeah, I want a puppy.
I just got excited.
Yes. No, not yet. Soon. Very, very soon. But as long as and there's enough people in that, I hate the term lead this industry, but they kind of do. Like, they're the ones being the thought leaders out front and saying this is kind of the direction it needs to go, that understand it's really about communication. And I think there's going to be a lot of people who take still, I mean, this is something, and we've talked about this for years, trying to take traditional advertising and marketing models and fit it into what we do online. There's still going to be those people, and we're still going to have that struggle. And I think that's why we're still kind of in that, you know, we're still toddlers, because we're still trying to educate people that there needs to be a little bit more than let's take the old model and shove it into the new technology.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're moving in the right direction with that. And I think that a lot of these things that we're seeing with the new platforms that come out, that, you know, are they really useful or not useful? We don't know until we try them. The changes at Facebook, the changes at Twitter, you know, with them going to a much more of a, you know, there's going to be an ad model. There's going to be a paid model out there that is going to have a bigger impact than I think a lot of people are seeing right now on Twitter. So I think as long as there's a core group of people who still get this is still about communicating, and that we're still trying to reach, whether it's 10,000 individuals or a individual, the message is still going to a person.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as there's enough people remembering that, I'm not concerned about it. We're going to go through all of these little circles to get there. But.
So let me throw some out there. Let me push back on it and challenge you a little bit on that. So, you know, obviously, you know, I'm one of those type of believers, and I use social to be social. You know, I tell people my favorite use of social media is to go have lunch with someone. You know, I like to find somebody, target them, learn about them, and then ask them to go for lunch. But yeah, let's say I'm a brand and really I want to be connected. I want to be social. And now all of a sudden the throttle's put in place. Let's say everybody follows suit with what Facebook is doing. Now all of a sudden we're letting algorithms and artificial intelligence dictate what they think we want to see. And now all of a sudden the message that you're trying to come through with is being throttled because the AI, the algorithms are determining it doesn't meet the standards. So, you know, when Facebook says it's degrading meme content, well, what if I want to see memes? When Eat24 breaks up with Facebook because they're posting sushi porn and that's what their people want, you know, why is it Facebook's job to determine that? And I'm not saying everybody else will follow suit, but what if they did? You know, what if – because what happened in social media that was so profound to us is that we removed that gatekeeper, right? No longer could anybody say, you can't publish. It was like, look, you got a phone, you got an internet connection, you can publish now. And when you look at something like what's happening with the Facebook news feed and a lot of those conversations about, you know, trying to serve up what's supposed to be relevant – we're now imposing a form of gatekeeper, a form of control. And does that not actually degrade the experience? Doesn't that take some of that humanity out of it?
I think it can. I think that is when it becomes incredibly incumbent on those of us in the industry to make sure that we're providing not just the disgusted feedback in, I hate what you're doing, Facebook, but feedback that's important to them, that, hey, we are going out and talking to these people, and this is the feedback that we're getting. I think it's also incumbent on us to understand, you know, I liken it a lot to the transition from radio to TV, TV to telemarketing, you know, all of these changes that we went through, and it became incumbent on the people who were in the industry trying to get the message out to figure out how to use the newest tool.
Mm-hmm.
And is it always going to be easy? No, it's not. Do I like the fact that there's this new gatekeeper? Not really, but I also understand that if we want to keep using these tools, they've got to figure out how to make money, because the tools can't be free forever.
Mm-hmm.
And if that means that maybe we need to change a little bit in what we do to allow them to make the money to continue to exist and continue to be free to most people, then maybe we need to say, okay, we understand where you're coming from and make some adjustments. And then we need to give them good feedback on, this is what is working and this is what's not working. And if you want this to be successful for the people who are going to pay you, then these are things you need to be considering when you're creating these new algorithms or you're creating this new format. Or you know, like one of the things that jumped out at me that I have the new Facebook look. Okay. One of the things that stood out the most with me, and I actually sent a letter to Facebook customer service, you know, emailed them and said, hey, you know, something you want to think about, you're trying to go after a very diverse audience, including older people. The font on this new layout makes it very hard for older people to read. And it's things like that, giving them feedback in, you want this to work for the most people possible so that then you can get people to pay you to use your platform. We need to be giving them that feedback.
See, I guess you're just more optimistic than me. You know, I feel like they are not listening at all. And maybe it's because I stamp my feet and throw tantrums instead of providing it in a more constructive and positive way, probably because of my, you know, issues I have with Facebook. But, you know, I just wonder because, you know, look at every time Facebook makes a change, there's a massive uproar and then nothing happens. It just kind of moves forward as planned. And, right. You know, sometimes I wonder, is what's best for the user going to be the thing that takes hold, or is it going to be the thing that yields the greatest profit in spite of anything? And I think that's sometimes my fear.
Well, and I think it's a legitimate fear. And I wonder about that sometimes myself. But the reality is, they're in their infancy too. They're still trying to figure it out. It's what's going to work. And I think they're going to come to the realization that if they're not providing something that works for their users, users will leave. And if users are leaving, the dollars don't come in. And, you know, we may not like a lot of the way that a lot of the experiments are trying. And I don't like a lot of the experiments are trying. And I really wish, I'm a big believer, if you're going to experiment with something, leave it in place. You know, we talk about this all the time in social media marketing, is you can't just jump in and do something for 2 weeks and expect it to get a result and to really know whether or not it's working. You got to leave it in place for a little while and see what happens. And I think Facebook needs to wake up and realize that as well, is you can't just keep making changes, because if you keep making changes that are not popular, the audience leaves. If the audience leaves, the money leaves. So
fair enough.
Fair enough. Figure it out too.
Yeah. I mean, it, like you said, we're all in the infancy phase, so I'm sure we'll all figure it out. I think it's interesting to watch how each of these services are kind of copying each other. One releases something, then another releases something, then some changes it, and then the other changes it. And they're all kind of copying each other in like a race to homogenization at some point. It's kind of a little bit disturbing.
Else.
Yeah, like Twitter becoming Facebook is probably about the most terrifying thing in the world to me. In the social media realm of things, let me be clear. There are more terrifying things in the world.
And I agree with you completely on that. I think that is one of the things that really does that I want to see the platforms take a stand for what they were created for. And this is my call out to all those founders, is you created a unique platform for a reason. And not only from a marketing standpoint, where I want those unique platforms because I can do different things and appeal to different audiences on those unique platforms, but from a personal standpoint, you know, I'm one of those believers. Every one of my social media accounts has a different purpose. You know, Twitter's where I talk to the world. That's what I do with everybody. Facebook is, I talk to my colleagues, I talk to my friends, but more importantly, I talk to my family and my friends that are flung all over the world. LinkedIn's my professional network, period. Nothing else. So, and then I think the founders need to really remember they created unique platforms for a reason. And if they will stick true to what that reason for that unique platform was, they're going to be more inclined to be successful than trying to be the next whatever it's going to be.
So that's an interesting point. It's funny because I wanted to ask your perspective on a couple things. You know, we've been talking a lot about Facebook so far, so why not talk a little bit more about Facebook? And we can also kind of touch on Google. But, you know, if you look at Google and where they started to what they're investing in now, from Google Fiber and the balloons that provide internet and self-driving cars and all of the different things that they're doing, a lot of it has fallen way outside of their core product, which at the beginning was simply search, you know, helping to organize the world's information. You look at what Facebook's doing, and their strategy as of late has been to basically buy companies and then just let them operate as they are. At least that's what they say it is. You know, I, for one, don't trust them. I think they're trying to take all of our data and sell it. But, you know, Facebook acquires WhatsApp, you know, which irony of the century. They create a platform around privacy and they sell it to – and no ads, and they sell it to Facebook for $19 billion. Right. But, you know, what do you think about some of these – sort of pivots in what we're seeing in the social media world, where to a certain extent there's some consolidation? You know, you're seeing a lot of the bigger players that have gone public have a little bit more money to play with. They're acquiring more companies and adding to their portfolio. What do you think about that in terms of the effect and the impact that that's going to have when so many things are going to be owned by one particular entity? You know, you look at Google, they own Google Plus, they own Gmail, they own Google Calendar, they shut down our favorite Google Reader. But, you know, it's all in one place. They provide a utility. It changes the brand perception. Now Facebook has Instagram. They have WhatsApp. They have Oculus. What do you think about this? What's going to happen as a result of this? Is it good? Is it bad?
I personally think a lot of it is ridiculous. I think that these companies need to take a step back. I'm not seeing, and I could be very wrong, somewhere in some back room at Facebook, there could be, or any of these other brands. I'm sure there's somebody coming up with a strategy. My concern is that the strategy is we'll get to be the biggest by buying the most. For example, the acquisition of Oculus, I cannot see a strategic direction for that anytime in the near future. Now, long term, possibly, but it doesn't have a wide enough adoption in the general public, which is where most of their audience is. You know, Facebook's audience is not the techies who like playing video games. Facebook audience is, you know, the mom who wants to share photos of her kids. So I'm not seeing what the strategic direction was there. And that is what concerns me about some of this consolidation. Not that it's all going to end up being at one company. I think the market will never let that happen. If you look at the smartphone market, that's a great example of how the market will never let the consolidation be at a single company. Okay, because if that was true, Android would have all of the market, or iPhone would have all of the market. And while they may have majorities, they don't have it all.
Yeah.
And I think the same thing's going to happen with a lot of these consolidations, like with Google or with Facebook or some of these other companies that are buying up a lot of the smaller startups. It's going to self-regulate eventually, and it's going to self-regulate based on what people are willing to tolerate or willing to pay for. My concern is if I saw acquisitions that strategically made sense, like Instagram, that strategically made sense for what the platform is and who their audience is. Completely made sense. I'm seeing too many at ridiculously overvalued buyouts. And I'm talking ridiculously overvalued buyouts.
Well, I mean, clearly we're talking about the $19 billion for WhatsApp.
Oh, yeah. There is no way they can potentially ever recoup that money. I mean, the amount of time it will take them to recoup that money to make that investment worth it, I can't see a strategic vision there.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
That's what concerns me.
I mean, I'd be curious if in like 3 years we look back at this interview, we look back at this conversation we're having, and we're like, how could we not have seen it? Duh. But
and
I can't see it.
What will happen that we can't see it right now, but.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. We'll see what happens there.
Eh. I hope that is what happens, actually, because then that means that, you know, there was a lot of things going on we didn't see.
Yeah. Well, listen, I want to pivot. I want to talk to you about something that is so something I want to talk to you about, because you're that person to me. You kind of carry, in my eyes, you carry the flag for being really connected and human on the internet. Like you are the one carrying that torch around, saying, come on, people, like, be a little vulnerable, share a little bit about yourself, give somebody a, you know, what they need on a bad day. And I know that, you know, if I were to ever post something on the line on Facebook or on Twitter where I'm like, I'm just having a crappy day, I know that one of the first three people that are going to comment, you're going to be in one of them. So, you know, you work with brands. I work with brands. How have you found, or have you found, any way to convey the importance of making those real deep human connections, and one, being vulnerable, and two, giving other people the freedom and the space to be vulnerable, so that we can make this internet, we can make this online transparent conversation something that's real? Because something that I constantly struggle with is that I find myself upset with the lack of tolerance towards negativity or depression or being upset or anything online, that there is this certain shove it in the closet, sweep it under the rug thing that's happening on social, where all we get is the curated self, these magnificent parties and foods that we eat and everything. And how have you found any success in communicating to people that we need to be real out there, and why?
I think the biggest success I found with the brands that I'm working with is in my initial discussions with them. I talk to them. I mean, you know this because you've sat in on pitch meetings with me. The very first question I ask a brand is, why? Why are you doing this? What is the motivation? And we get down to nitty gritty, very clear business objectives. Once you get them very clear on what their business objective is and who it is they're trying to talk to, then some of the next questions I start talking to them about is, okay, what would you want to hear from a company that's selling what they're selling? And I ask them, who are you a customer of? And what is it that you like about what you see about them on social, whether it's related to their business or not? And we talk a lot about what they're seeing and what they relate to and what interests them. Or, you know, if their client is, you know, if the industry or the brand that they're promoting is their kids, okay, your niece or your nephew or your children, what do they relate to? And getting them to really start thinking about it from that very human, what would they want perspective, I found really kind of starts to get that message across. And it takes a few conversations because they're like, you know, because it's, I've just gotten done talking to them about how to make money and what their business objectives are. And now I'm going to talk to them about how to be human. And the other thing, there is a great quote from Matt Collier, and it is in nearly every presentation that I do. And I know you've seen it a few times. And Mac talks about, he said this early on years ago, don't blog about your product or your service. Blog about how it impacts their lives. And I think if you look at everything in social, substitute blog for tweet, post, video, whatever it is. And that's how I usually get through to these brands. Let's talk about how it impacts your potential customers' lives, how we can make it better, how do we educate them, how do we inform them, and how do we entertain them? And then, of course, we get into the teaching them the difference between educating and informing. and that's, to me, that's what's been working, is just getting them to look at it from their customers' viewpoint.
So a little bit of that goes back to storytelling. You know, you're kind of telling, you know, a lot of people when they talk about Apple and the success Apple has had in marketing is that they're telling their customers a story about themselves, not about Apple. They're telling their customers a story about their customers, which is, here's who you are as a customer. You appreciate design. You appreciate this. So to a certain extent, when we get to the conversation about social and being social and connecting with people and putting yourselves in those shoes and being empathetic and all of that, to a certain extent, as quasi dirty as it feels, we can even make that into a strategic conversation about how that helps you to position yourself, that to a certain extent, by telling and revealing some of the warts, by showing the behind the curtain, by lifting up the skirt or whatever you want to call it, whatever the expressions are, it provides a little bit more of a connection and trust in the scenario, because you're not just boasting about how great you are, but you're willing to show who you are and why it matters to that customer, and that you're just like them.
Yeah, exactly. I think, and that is the most important thing that as a human being or as a brand on social that we can do, we have to remember this is about communicating you know, this is a 24/7 exposure to our lives. Now, does that mean we tell everybody everything?
I mean,
you heard the story.
No.
Right.
Wait,
no.
Which is it?
Yes and no.
Both.
You know, I told you the story about, I got, especially in the early days of social, got accused all the time of everybody knew everything about my life. And then I was at a talk and somebody was kind of going, well, you know, you tell everyone everything. And I don't think I want anybody to have that much view into my life. And I said, okay, if that's really what you think, how many kids do I have? Who's my boyfriend? Where do I actually live other than in Philadelphia? And all of a sudden they realized that despite having this incredibly transparent persona, they really didn't know that much about the things that I didn't want them to know anything about. And I use that story a lot with the companies that I work with. Is let's be that open and that transparent. Let's talk about these things. But that doesn't mean we have to talk about everything. And it's creating, I mean, it does feel a little dirty because we're creating this persona. But, you know, what is the old marketing adage? People do business with people they like and they trust. Well, I need to create somebody online that your potential customer is going to like and going to trust.
Mm-hmm.
And that means creating telling a story about who this business is, who the people behind it are, who the people that work there are. And let's be open. That doesn't mean we have to tell them, here's what your financials are and, you know, all of those kinds of things. Let's tell them the things that they need to know to make an educated decision about whether or not they want to do business with you.
Mm-hmm. So that brings me to another thing that I feel like it's been forever since we've talked, and it's been probably like a day on Twitter. But I'm just saying,
yeah.
it's a long time since we've like sat down because, you know, you moved to Texas and all. But I want to talk to you about something. I saw an article recently. It was about like five pieces of conventional wisdom about social media that are not true or something like that. I forget the name of the article.
I saw the same article. Yeah.
And in one of them, one of the things that they talked about was we need to stop saying that we're going to humanize the brand. And when I read it, what became immediately clear to me is that whoever wrote it probably had absolutely no idea what people mean when we say humanize the brand.
Yes.
Because they immediately went into, well, you know, humans share memes and your brand shouldn't share a meme. It's like, no, you're missing what we're talking about. So to set the record straight, Gloria, what does it mean to humanize a brand?
To humanize a brand is to tell the story behind the business. Tell the story about how this business impacts you as a customer's life. Okay, it doesn't mean that we have to, you know, take a picture and have, you know, you can have a spokesmodel and all, or, you know, a funny mascot or anything. But to humanize a brand means we're actually paying attention to our customers. We're paying attention to their wants and needs, and we're going to talk to them about how what we as a company can do to fulfill those wants and needs. And why what we offer them actually makes their life better, easier, faster, stronger, whatever it is that they're needing. How does what we do make that happen? And we don't do that in a, we're going to push information at you in kind of way, like watching a TV commercial. We're going to do it as part of a conversation. We're going to listen to what it is you want and need. And we're going to be actively listening so that when that need comes up, we can say, hey, we have a solution for you. And not a come by me solution, but a here's some information solution.
Mm-hmm.
Now maybe you'll think about us when it's time to buy. That's what humanizing a brand is about. It's not about, you know, being a person. It's about having a human conversation with your potential customers.
Yeah, I don't think it's the same way as how people ascribe human traits to animals. Like, oh, my dog, he's like people. I don't think it's like you have to start doing corporate selfies. But I agree with you. I think that humanizing the brand when it comes down to it, you know, if I were to try and distill, you know, the essence of what we're talking about here, it's that people don't have relationships with brands and logos and companies. They have relationships with other people that may or may not work at those companies. That relationships are a strictly human or a strictly organism to organism thing. That there needs to be some sort of a bond, and that bond has to exist when people or when the entities on either side are willing to open up and listen to one another and engage in a more deep and meaningful dialogue. So when it comes to humanizing the brand, I really think that it's less about, you know, whatever this article was talking about it, that, you know, we have to act like a human would in the same way that we personify animals, but more that we have to cause our brands to be more engaged with other human beings in the way that a human being would. And that's having our people do that.
Right. It's listening to them. It's providing a solution for them. It's paying attention to what their wants and needs are. You know, I'm a big fan, and you've probably heard this 500 times. Educate, inform, entertain.
Yep.
That's what this is all about. And if we do one of those three things as a brand, if we're helping our clients do one of those three things, people will respond. Because in that, we're meeting a need that they have.
Gloria Bell, I love seeing your face. Even though this is going to be an audio-only podcast for everybody, I want you all to know that are out there that listening is great, but if you could just see this woman's face, she is the embodiment of a hug, I'm telling you. Just you got to follow Gloria Bell. And, you know, on that note, Gloria, I want you to tell everybody where they can go and be social with you, because they need to see how to do it right, because you are leading the charge, and I follow in your footsteps watching the way that you do it, because you do it right. And I just want to thank you and appreciate that as someone who is a social person and who has known you and loved you for so long, that you're doing it right. And I want more people to behave like you do online. So tell people where they can go and be social with you so that they can connect with you, find out about what you do, how to work with you, and how to humanize their brands in the right way.
Oh, thank you. At belldigitalstrategies.com, we'll tell you a little bit about my company. And I am Gloria Bell everywhere else, at Gloria Bell on Twitter, Gloria Bell on Facebook, Gloria Bell on LinkedIn. You can find me. It's one of the advantages of having been an early adopter. Right? I got my name.
Yeah. You either have to have a unique name or be an early adopter. I'm luckily a little bit of both. The only Gibbard I ever have to compete with is Ben Gibbard from Death Cab for Cutie. That's about it. Otherwise, I got it pretty locked.
Competition.
It's not bad company to be in. Not at all. I can't complain about it. Well, Gloria, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I'm glad we finally got this scheduled and everything. I've wanted you to be on for so long. And I'm going to put all this stuff in the show notes so that people can go and find you. And just know that here in Philadelphia, we miss you terribly, but you are never, ever forgotten.
Well, it's the beauty of the internet. I'm never far away.
Exactly.
You're so much. And I will see you all in a few days.
That's true. I will see you soon.
Philly shortly.
Excellent. So, well, in that case, for all of you out there listening, thank you for having listened. I hope you got a lot out of this. And tune in on our next show. Take care, everyone. Thanks again for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed that episode of Conversations. Be sure to go over to iTunes or Stitcher and give us a rating. Tell us what you love about the show, what you hate about the show. And we hope you come back for our next episode. Take care.